Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
The boom happens. You've had the event. You've activated your crisis process and your crisis teams assembling in your conference room or your EOC or whatever you have available to you. And as they stream in, you look around the table and what do you see?
Well, hopefully you see a bunch of different people going to work.
Yeah.
They know what their role is, so they just start.
So they all have degrees in emergency management. They just dress differently.
Yeah.
They look different.
They look a little different.
But that's not what you mean.
No, diversity. It's not at all. Maybe they don't all have degrees in emergency management.
I don't have a degree in emergency management.
Exactly.
Do you?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of experience in it.
So we're talking about the diversity of your crisis team. And what we're really meaning here is diversity of thought and background and experience and role and probably a whole host of things I'm not thinking of, education and training and
absolutely.
But why do you not want everyone to be the same? Why do you not want, you know, a professional emergency management, crisis management team where everybody, you know, spent a decade at FEMA and, you know, has all these emergency management certifications and that's your whole crisis team. That's what you want, right?
Well, I mean, maybe some of that is helpful if you have one, two people that have that background.
Some.
But the problem with that is that it really limits your creativity and thought and your problem-solving capabilities. If you have everyone thinking the exact same thing, you got nobody thinking what's happening over here. You know, what about this? What about this? What about this?
I came around to this in this idea of diversity of thought and experience in education, and it was very difficult for me to kind of come around to that.
Oh, really?
It was, because I thought that, well, I was kind of personalizing the whole thing, right? Here I am. This was when I was in my early 20s and thinking about these conversations around diversity in the workplace. And what I was missing in all of that I don't think I was mature enough to understand is we're really talking about you want a diverse team because of the creativity that it brings to the table, because of the problem solving that it brings to the table, because people are approaching these problems in different ways.
Yeah.
And it might be easier to be filled in a room filled with people who think and act and dress and have the same background as you.
Oh, yeah.
But you will not get to the better answer.
No.
You need to have that diversity of thought and experience and education.
I agree. And you won't grow as a team. You'll stay stagnant if you're only ever thinking about the same things. You only look at things the same way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and look at it from the human side of a crisis, right? And I'm just going to use my own experience here that I think I'm very emotional about the human impact of a crisis when the crisis is over. It's not in my nature to think about the human impact of a crisis while it's happening because I'm trying to deal with it.
Right.
Right? I'm the wrong person to be providing input on that particular aspect of crisis management. However, I would always bring people to the table who balanced that because I understood that difference in thought and experience and education got us to the better answer.
Yep, just as important. And I think about that too in some of the experiences I've had in some of the teams that I've worked on in crisis and not in crisis too, and that human factor of the I just think of this experience I had at my recent training at NTC, right? Where everyone's working really hard. It's like 150 million degrees outside and you're working really hard. And I was working. I'm kind of a worker bee, right? So I keep going. And one of our enlisted came up to me and she looked at me in the eyes and she said, "Are you okay, ma'am?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine. We got to do this." And she literally, one of the lowest enlisted we have, she put me basically in a corner and she handed me the hose to my my water and said, "Just sit there and drink for a few minutes," just because she could recognize that I needed to stop, that I was showing signs of dehydration, that I was showing signs of delirium. And I didn't know it at the time because I was in the middle. We were getting stuff done. So I think about that nurturer of the
Absolutely.
Someone who is not in charge of this whole operation, but she was in charge of her own ability to look at look at the picture and see how people were doing. So that nurture.
And just for those of you that maybe haven't listened to previous episodes, Jen's talking about as a member of the Minnesota Army National Guard, being at the National Training Center for right. It was 3 weeks?
Yeah, about 3 weeks.
Felt like you were gone for forever.
It felt like it when I was there, too.
Jen had a three-week training evolution out in the California high desert.
Yep.
Where there were lots of flying and lots of sitting around in tents.
Yeah. And so I got this sort of idea of this concept around this podcast from actually, ironically, Lindsay, who was on our crisis team mm-hmm. at our previous employer. And she was...
And now works with us here at Brighton.
She does work with us here at Brighton. And she said to me, she's like, well, Jen, think about it like this. We need to have people who can communicate, for instance, who is the one person that is able to go to the boss and say what needs to be said and is not worried about
right.
what the reaction of the boss is going to be, but then at the same time is able to manage the reaction of the boss, right?
Right.
To keep that away from the team, to keep business rolling and then handling, I don't want to say handling, but kind of keeping the boss at bay and letting them know what the updates are and managing that reaction. So the boss is now walking into the group of emergency managers and asking everyone what's going on, which we've had happen before. Actually.
We have had happen. And, you know, the default answer from an emergency manager might be, well, it was right here on our F-100 incident status form.
Yeah. Well, that's not very human if you think about it, when you've got a boss who's stressing about, and not only that, but recognizing that boss has a boss that they're answering to.
Or a board.
Exactly. Or a board that they're answering to. So making sure that everyone is communicated with appropriately.
Right.
In the way that they need to be communicated to.
Right.
Because not everyone's the same, right?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge, I think, to think about the roles that you really need on your team in a crisis. To have that good mix of diversity that helps you get to the best possible answer, but also helps you just deal with the issues that have kind of come up in front of you
yep.
along the way. And I think we often think about, when we talk about a crisis team, we talk about the makeup organizationally that we're looking for, right?
Right? You need an incident lead, you need
HR, you need legal, you need your lines of business, you need supply chain, facilities,
travel.
Yeah. I mean, you communications, you're bringing these folks to the table, but there's also the makeup of what's the right mix of people's background and experience and education, in addition to the organizational elements that you're looking for.
Right.
In order to get you advance your strategy and deal with the crisis that you're working through.
Yeah. Everything down to when, again, I was talking to Lindsay about this, she mentioned individuals that were her sort of go-to for laughter. That kept everything, lighthearted. So there's always this person that could, you know, the worst case scenario could be going down and they somehow crack the funniest joke mm-hmm. that brings the whole team back to reality and gets everyone back to working. Mm-hmm. You always have that person. And then you always have the person that's like, I'll get the food. We talk about food a lot.
The food pusher. We like to eat here.
Yeah. We talk about food a lot now that I think about it.
Which I keep reminders of that around. Jen doesn't, so.
And the coffee.
And usually coffee. Gotta have coffee.
Where's the coffee?
And caffeine, Red yes. Bull, whatever.
Never take away the coffee.
Yeah. I tried to remove the coffee maker out of the command center once, and I think I was about to have a mutiny.
No.
We know there was a Starbucks downstairs one floor away.
It's too far.
It's too far.
It's too far. Actually, ironically, back to the NTC conversation at the National Training Center, that was my leader was talking about it and before we went, and I told him, I was like, well, as long as there's coffee, you just keep the coffee going and we'll get the job
done. Do anything you need, sir, as yes. long as there's coffee.
Do not take the coffee away. Exactly.
Yep. But I think you're talking about, you know, you were highlighting the need for laughter and humor and, you know, who could you go to? Lindsay talking about who she could go to. I think that's great advice because it's a weird sense of humor, I think, that develops on a crisis team because you get comfortable with each other and you're working through these very difficult situations and it would look weird to the outside. But we always had theme songs for yeah. crisis for many of them.
That's right. I forgot
because
about the theme
songs. It was both a stress relief, but singing is kind of something that, you know, getting in your groove to music is, that's something that motivates me. I don't really sing, but like I need music to do certain work.
Yeah.
It's just the way I'm wired. But I think we always had great conversations about, you know, what's the song for the situation we find ourselves in with this hurricane or fire or whatever it was that we were dealing with. And but from the outside, I think people would just think that's weird.
Yeah.
To us, that was just normal.
Which is sort of funny that you mentioned that, because then we also had definitely the people that were not having the theme song conversation. Like, they were not into the theme song, but they were when you needed the projector fixed because inevitably it's something not going broke. To work.
Right.
They're the ones that are like, I got it, and can yeah. and fix something on a dime. You
know? I was involved in a 97-day crisis situation at our previous employer where I got pulled out of my normal job. I wasn't yet in the full-time crisis role.
Okay.
I was leading a different team, and I got pulled out of that along with about 14 other people who began reporting to me that day to work on a proxy contest that our employer was involved in. And we were in one big conference room for 97 days together. And it was the most eclectic group of people put together. And we did that a little bit intentionally, but it was definitely a situation where we were looking for a set of individual talents and personalities, and we got that. But we had one person who was one of the more senior people in that team who, when the team discussed, we all had to work in this room because it was just super confidential stuff. And her approach was, you know, when I needed to participate in a team meeting, she did. And then would put on noise-canceling headphones with no music. So it was just total silence. And she would just sit there amongst the conversation that we were having and work. Now, you might find that – some people might find that off-putting or might find it to be, you know, overly introverted. But she got everything done.
Yeah. That was her way to get it done.
Right. Like, hey, I need a 30-page profile of this individual, and I'm going to need it by tomorrow morning. And I need a one-page executive that a CEO would read, or a one-page executive summary that the CEO would read. Okay.
Yep. But that's the thing with a crisis team, I think, or any very well-functioning team, is there's a time to work and there's a time to play.
Right.
And you can flip that switch really quickly, I think, in those teams, which I've always loved being part of them for that reason, that way to do it. So you've got the leader, the one that's able to delegate, who's mm-hmm. going to point to X, Y, and Z, the one that always knows what needs to be done. You got the followers, the worker bees, which mm-hmm. could be interchangeable. You know, one right. day the leader could be this person, and the next day you could be a follower.
We had 7 or 8 people that were authorized to be the leader of a crisis.
Yep.
An approach we encourage because of having backups and such. So
absolutely.
It could be different. And they all had different styles. And the team had to adapt as they worked through them.
Right. The importance of knowing when to lead and when to follow.
Right.
And when you're following, you may be the one that's keeping things lighthearted. You may be the one that's getting the coffee. Mm-hmm. And none of those jobs are above anyone at that point. This is just, how do we get this done?
Right. I think it's important throughout the crisis to realize that, you know, as you're working amongst your team that you've picked and put together, and you have all these different personalities and diversity of experience and background, like we've talked about, that you're dealing with impacted locations most of the time that are not where you're at. And they need to understand the experiences that all of you have had if they work through the situation that they're in. And their team may not have been as deliberately put together, right? Mm-hmm. They get to deal with the hand that was dealt. And you may have people that are all very similar.
Oh, they were hired just for a role.
They were hired for that role. Like, I mean, we saw this in our last role with distribution folks, because their job is to move stuff in huge quantities, and they know how to do that.
Yep. There's a specific skill set.
It's a specific skill set, and it is a science.
It's very effective.
There's a specific leadership type that I think we were looking for in those roles. Mm-hmm. And there were things that they were missing. You know, that team was not real diverse in terms of background. They all came from kind of a similar world. Mm-hmm. So we often had to remind them, hey, so we were dealing with this situation and you've had victims, team member, employees that are victims. There's going to be emotional impact, and here's what that's going to look like over the next 7 to 10 days.
Yep.
And
or longer.
It's going to feel okay for about 3 days, and then it's not. And you're going to have to help your team work through this. But it was our understanding of, you know, because we had this more diverse group, the things that they were going to go through, and you were able to kind of share and operationalize that experience.
Well, and I think we had seen so many things at that point, you know, that we knew. We kind of had it down to a science at some point. We knew after a certain amount of time, like you said, this is going to happen. After a certain amount of time, this is going to happen.
Right.
So we knew how to communicate that out and to train those field leaders on how to manage that. But you're right. They didn't always have that skill set.
In certain parts of the organization.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you assemble your crisis team and they all look the same and you all have the same background, you have some challenges to work on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.